pat him, did you make the most of Eat Out to help out?
I actually did. I pretty much, like, I think almost every day. I think it was only like 2 days that we didn't manage to get out. So everybody, and welcome back to another incredible episode of Somewhere in Between, the AIT podcast brought to you by the Royal College of GPs. I'm Anthony, and I'm back with Hatim, Johannes, and Mira for another episode. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hey.
Hello. So it feels like it's been a while since we've recorded. We had loads of really great content throughout the month of August with Celebrate, and throughout September there's some great content coming as well with GP Ready, which is to help people transition from being a trainee to first five and for kind of early career GPs. But this is the first kind of like not related to those podcasts that we've done in a while, so it's good to have a bit of a catch up, I think. How have you guys been? How is everybody coping with training, new jobs, etc.?
It's definitely been a change. I was talking about this earlier. Having been in primary care for the best part of 10 months with a little stint in, well, 12 months with a little stint in geriatrics, I'm now fully fledged back into hospital life, wearing those scrubs, early starts, on calls. All I can say is I'm enjoying pediatrics, but I'm really sure now that I've picked the right training pathway, which has been a really nice sort of revelation, I think. So yeah, that's been good. How about you, Hatim?
I'm officially part-time from this week, which has been nice, gone 60%. My practice has been really fun so far. I really enjoyed it. I had a discussion in my tutorial this week about moving to 15 minutes appointments, and I was a bit like, can we extend it out at least to October before I go down to 15 minutes? Because before you know, he's going to try and move me down to 10, and yeah, I'm not too keen on that. But otherwise, I'm actually enjoying the general practice so far. I feel like the most enjoyable thing about it is that you can sort of, so majority of appointments still telephone, and you can sort of triage your patients. And then the ones that you do bring in, you can actually spend a bit more time in if you need to actually deal with the complexities of their care. So I really enjoyed that aspect of it. And then on the side, I've started again at Health Education England, working as part of a new AI and robotics team, which is quite exciting. Very early days, but it looks like it's going to be quite an exciting project and a fun thing to work on. Ooh. How's it going for you, Johannes?
Yeah, not bad. Without stating the obvious, psychiatry is very strange. And it seems to be kind of the opposite of GP, because it's very slow and you don't really see the patients very much. You're kind of quite separated from them. So it's just a weird contrast. It is interesting, but I think, like you said, Mira, it's kind of making me more comfortable about my choice of career. Although yesterday I ended up doing some bystander CPR, and I kind of missed the acuteness of, like, I don't know, doing something active and deliberate. And it did make me think, like, how am I going to achieve that in GP? But I know that with GP, you can always squeeze things into it. So, but yeah.
You can always squeeze in some CPR.
You can always squeeze in some CPR. Absolutely.
I think we need to ask Johannes, was the person all right? Did they get to hospital?
Well, we got the heart started again. And then the big clever helicopter people came and took over.
Okay, so that's definitely some good CPR there. No, I agree with you. I think that's one of the things about GP training that I've really appreciated, is that although sometimes being in hospital feels, and we've touched upon this before, all of us have, a little bit like service provision or covering a rota, or maybe being in a specialty that for some reason you can't see the relevance of it in primary care, you actually then really get to know a bit more about yourself, of what you like and what you don't like, and maybe what you want to then include within your career. Because I think the really nice thing about being in pediatrics is that you get a lot of face time with the consultants and registrars who have had years out, who have done projects all over the world, but also with interest in things like leadership and medical education, and all of that sort of runs across into primary care as well. So I've sort of found that really interesting. How about you, Ant? I think you've got some big news to share with us.
Yeah, well, it's been an interesting few weeks, loads of changes, but
I guess the big piece of news is, like, drum roll, my RCA results have come out and I passed my RCA. So yeah, hopefully I've got my final ARCP in just over a week, and yeah, hopefully I'll be all signed off and good to go and finish training by the end of October.
I mean, I think we can celebrate already. Woo!
Can we do like a round of applause? Can we insert a solid round of applause?
Just wondering if we now have to start fighting to take this position.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, well, I mean, guys, I won't be around forever. You need to start thinking about who's going to be taking my seat, the hot seat.
I mean, it's like Game of Thrones.
Can't imagine it without the four of us, hey? I think we've still got a good number of episodes in us before that happens. The reality hits us, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, you can always invite me back as a guest when I'm out of here.
Yeah. And how do you feel about recording once every fortnight, just to help us fill gaps?
You can be our locum podcast.
Yeah.
We just won't pay you locum rates, that's all.
We can't afford that life after BTS.
Yeah.
Which is an episode we are planning on doing coming up. So, you know, gentle plug there.
Yeah, definitely. But no, it's great. And my post CCT job plan is starting to come together. I've got my, been offered a five session, well, I've been offered a job in my practice that I'm going to take five sessions there, which is going to be good. And yeah, I've got a few other things lined up, which is going to be a busy, but hopefully really exciting time post CCT. So yeah, I've got a few more weeks of training left and then be heading into that, which will be great.
That's really, really exciting. And I'm sure we'll hear loads more from you anyway, Ant, with all your RCGP work and everything else. But yeah, congratulations. You're a real GP now.
Yeah, I mean, nearly, yeah.
Almost 2 weeks to go.
Yeah. But no, I think it's going to be really good. And it's nice because we've got so many trainees in the practice that I'm in at the minute. So it's kind of good. I think hopefully it's nice for them to see kind of that finish line is not too far away either. And over the next few months, there's a few other ST3s who are going to be finishing who are out of sync or Feb starters. So yeah, I think it's going to be really nice for them. And now that I've done the RCA, a couple of them are now starting to prepare for the next sitting. So it's good to be able to hopefully provide a few useful tips for it.
Yeah, definitely, I'm sure. And I think it August has felt like a funny transition for us all because COVID was in the way. There was lots of redeployment. Exams obviously had a huge rejig. And as you say, we haven't all done an episode about a different topic. So we thought we'd do something a bit different this week, didn't we?
Yeah, so this week we are reaching outside of London again, as we often try to do, not always successfully, but we're going to be talking to one of our AIT reps in Scotland, Katerina, who's an ST3 GP trainee, who might also have finished her training by the time this podcast comes out.
Indeed, she has CCT'd.
There we go. Another success story. So congratulations, Katerina. So we're going to be hearing from Katerina. Some really great reflections on this, but it's really good to be able to hear her discuss what her journey's been like as a trainee. It's been a really interesting one. So hopefully you enjoy this conversation between Mira and Katerina.
Hello, everyone. So today I'm joined with Katerina, who is our rep on the AIT National Committee and is our Scottish rep. So I'm delighted to have someone who's representing us from a regional perspective. And I'll hand it over to Katerina. Tell us who you are and a bit more about you.
Thanks very much, Mira. I'm delighted to join you today. So my name is Katerina Tober. I'm the Southeast AIT rep in Scotland. I've held that position for 4 years now, and I'm a GPST3. I'm just about to come to the end of my training in about a couple of weeks. So it's been a busy year, as I'm sure all of you will note, or ST3s. It's been an unusual year with COVID impacting a lot of our work. Understandably, and yeah, I'm just having recently gone through the RCA and still awaiting results. Exciting times, what can I say? Looking forward to what I'm going to do in a couple of weeks, thoughts about careers, and yeah, very happy to be here.
I mean, it's so great to speak to someone who has been through all of this. So on the podcast, we have talked about COVID a lot. Obviously, it's been the focus for a lot of trainees, and rightly so, but especially for our ST3s, as you said, it's been a a big change in the way we've known things to be. I think you look at SC3, right, that's when you're going to sit certain exams, then you'll interview and the portfolio, and it's all kind of a little bit of a neat package, but that kind of all got thrown up in the air, didn't it, a bit?
Yeah, it absolutely did. And speaking of somebody who rightly or wrongly left their AKT to the final year as well, sat pat in November or end of October, successfully got it, had the CSA booked, and then, like so many of us, had it postponed and then cancelled, and then ended up doing the RCA. So that was a challenge in itself. But you know, you adapt, don't you? We're all very good at adapting in medicine and general practice. And you know, my practice was really supportive, and we formed WhatsApp groups amongst the trainees in Scotland, certainly, that were doing it, supported each other, and made it through. 14 Fish platform was good, which was great, and the college gave out really good guidelines, so that was helpful too.
I mean, as a trainee who's just about finishing ST1, I feel like that's a really reassuring thing to hear from someone who's sort of further down the line in that in sort of training. And I think you mentioned the word sort of adapting and resilience and all of these things, and I think that's true. It's all the things we've kind of had to show in varying degrees, be it our working lives, but also our personal lives and social lives as well. And it's that strange thing we were talking about earlier before we were recording, weren't we, about how we are a community. And as GP trainees, we serve a community and we're there for our patients. But often as trainees, I guess sometimes it can feel a bit disparate. You're aware that, of course, there are GP trainees up in Scotland, for instance, but how we connect and how that all interlinks is something that's always fascinated me. And I really want us to sort of have that sense of community. And I think you sort of feel the same way as I do.
Yeah, I absolutely do. And I think I'm really keen to grow that. I think, you know, there's strength in numbers, and certainly COVID has shown us how important teamwork is, not only in the community and practices across the board, primary secondary care interface. You know, it's been amazing to see so many people pull together, NHS, non-NHS. And I think as AITs and, you know, first fives beyond that, it would be great to grow that kind of collaborative effort between us, you know, right across the UK, Northern Ireland, Scotland, England, Wales, and, you know, get in touch. I think the virtual world has really opened up as a result of COVID. You know, we're doing consultations, video calls, telephone calls now. And I think people like Helen Bevan talk a lot about virtual conferencing and things like that. And I do think at the moment we've got brilliant opportunities to do those sorts of things. And things like this, the podcasts where we can connect, listen, learn from each other and collaborate.
I completely agree with you. And I think a lot of people have said, as devastating as COVID and the implications of that have been for lots and lots of people, in terms of general practice and medicine, it almost feels as if we've jumped into the future of where we need to be in terms of technology and communicating with our peers and sharing good ideas. And I recently joined Twitter, and I found this whole other community on there that I had no idea about. Frankly, I'll be honest, it baffles me a little bit sometimes how quickly news can travel from one end to the other. But there are some really great platforms out there in which you would want our trainees and, you know, colleagues to communicate. And it's about highlighting that a bit. But I suppose I probably should rewind a little bit because we're jumping ahead in terms of, Katerina, tell me about you. So how did you get into GP training, and what's sort of your story been?
So I did my house jobs, as they were back then, so I'm a bit longer in the tooth than the average GP trainee, so I'll disclaim now. So I did anaesthetic training. I even got my CCT in anaesthetics.
Wow.
Yeah, and then just thought, you know, as good as anaesthetics was, I thought continuity of care, I really did miss that kind of relationship that you develop with people as you get to know them, building that rapport. And I thought, you know, general practice would give me that. So yeah, I had to go back to being a junior after being a pretty much independent practitioner. So that was challenging. Teaches you a lot about being humble, and you know, you learn different things. And I think being a little bit older, maybe and a bit more experience. You see things in slightly in different ways and from a different perspective. So that was helpful. And probably that's probably why I wanted to get involved in committees and just help trainees, I think, have a voice, because I think having been through another training program, you see things perhaps that could be improved. Don't get me wrong, there's always room for improvement everywhere. Sure. But, you know, and maybe being slightly older, maybe having the courage or slightly more courage to speak up when you see things that could be improved. So, yeah, it's been an interesting course. And then I did my coming to the end of 4 years of GP training. And last year I took a year out doing the Scottish Clinical Leadership Fellowship, which was a really great opportunity. And I know Anthony did a leadership fellowship as well, chair. And that was a wonderful way to connect right across the UK with other trainees, and really valued that. And again, learning from each other. And I'd really like to see that kind of thing mirrored in, you know, AIT and First Five across the UK.
I mean, I'm just staring in admiration because you've obviously done so much work and effort where you've got so far. And actually, it's so fascinating because we've said this before, haven't we, is that the different routes that people take to get into general practice is just staggering, and maybe far more varied than maybe other more traditional routes that people choose to do so. So, I mean, you're no stranger to exams then, having CCT and anaesthetics. And,
clearly a sucker for exams.
Whatever works for you, right, Katerina? But also the fact that you've done a 4-year GP program to include that year to widen your skill set. And as you said, you know, looking at the networking and the leadership skills, and one of our previous episodes was talking about, you know, avenues in digital technology, and speaking to a trainee who decided she really wanted to get involved with AccuRx and saw that it was a really innovative cutting edge of medical technology. And now we look in the pandemic and lots of practices are using AccuRx as a daily tool to text their patients and video consultations sort of in my practice and things like that. So there's real impacts that students and trainees can make all the way from the beginning. But if we talk about Scotland, how have you been to Scotland and sort of found yourself working there? And
so I met a Scotsman, and
as all the good stories go,
that's it. Yeah, so I was working down in the southwest of England. I met my now husband on a skiing holiday, as you do, and then I ended up moving to Edinburgh and starting my GP training. And it's, you know, it's great having had the experience of working in England and then coming to Scotland. Systems. Different, obviously GP training slightly different as well, but certainly in terms of you know, Scottish Council, and you will well know we've got our own Scottish Council, we've got our own sort of First Five AIT committee, and again I think that's really quite empowering for us, because as trainees and, you know, within the first 5 years of qualifying, we get together, we have the agency to discuss things, create papers about things. So we brought papers forward about out of hours working, training, you know, exam fees, leadership, well-being, lots of really important issues to trainees. So we do feel we do have impact, and then we, you know, we can bring that to Scottish Council, and obviously feeds into UK Council. So that's been really important, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, what I'm hearing from you is, you know, we all have a voice, and it's really important for us to put that forward and our opinions forward, especially in all the topics that you just mentioned about, you know, out of hours working, well-being. All of these are really vital and imperative to how we live our lives and how our future will be. And as a trainee, you have the ability to shape that in some way. So I guess, Katerina, what we're saying is if there are any other Scottish trainees that are listening that really do want to get involved, then we definitely want people to be interested, because these are the people that will help shape policy for the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there are elections, and we do try and put that out. So our national sort of Education for Scotland, they put out details, as well as the college put out details about elections. And we're very keen for people to even come to our faculty meetings. They're always open, you know, via Zoom, turn up, and very welcome to get involved at any point. I think just, you know, there's strength in numbers, and everybody's got great ideas. You know, it doesn't matter who you are, you come from a different perspective. You can feed in, and I think, you know, multiple brains are better than one, and I think we all need to work together. So very open to hearing from people that are keen. second.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose, having said that you've been a rep for 4 years now, how would you, do you think that that each year you've learned something different or been able to collaborate differently with other people and maybe seen the impact of that over the course of the 4 years that you've been representing?
I think it's, you know, being a rep is like being a GP in a way. You know, you build relationships, don't you? You build rapport with people. They get to know you, you know, trust. And they say trust and influence equals power. And I think, you know, when people know you for who you are and they recognize your strengths and perhaps your weaknesses and work with you, that's a really great thing. So having built relationship, I guess you see, you know, people adapt and be more willing to listen, maybe sort of higher up in leadership roles. So over the 4 years, you know, we've created things in Scotland. So for example, we didn't have national AIT conferences when I started. We created those. We got along Helen Stokes Lampard, for example, to come and speak. And, you know, people that would talk about dynamic, interesting topics from mindfulness to the latest technologies. And so that's been a good feature. Running sort of educational updates and talking to expedition medics and things. So I guess our reach maybe as trainee reps has evolved over the past 4 years. And I think, yeah, our relationships have strengthened. So again, it's, you know, it's, you kind of feel it's slow progress and I'm quite impatient and I'd love to sort of reach out and sort of grab the rest of the UK and go, right guys, come on, let's get together now. And, you know, but we've got to be patient and these things take time. But over the time period, it's, yeah, definitely improved our voice as trainees.
And I can just hear the positivity in everything that you've just said, that there is, you know, this move of momentum and progress that is being made. And absolutely, I think everyone's ideal is to have, you know, something at council and it all happen and there be a big, big change. And I think as GP trainees, as you say, when you serve a patient population, it's about taking things a step at a time. And it's about being involved initially, maybe within your hospital, within your own VTS or training group, and then representing them and then, you know, deciding that actually maybe you want to have a bit of a voice on a committee or the National AIT committee and sort of increasing your reach slowly and gradually through that. And I think by doing that, you end up meeting a lot of interesting people that I can certainly say over the last sort of 10 months of being a rep myself, I've met people that I know I wouldn't have met had I not done these things. And there is this, I think there is an element of sometimes when events are put on and all of these, location can be a big deal, but I almost think that COVID's been a bit of an equalizer on that front, because we can't all meet in the same place and it's probably not safe to have, you know, a conference in London with 500, 600 people at the moment. So utilizing things like Zoom and Google Teams to mean that you can be in webinars where the main speaker might be in Northern Ireland is such a great thing, I think.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And we've certainly been doing that, for example, in our practice during COVID, you know, the development of technology. We've talked about sort of NHS Near Me on the Attend Anywhere platform for video calls, but we've also been using Microsoft 365 Teams, which has been brilliant, you know, the sort of social distancing, so somebody can be tuned in their room, somebody else is up in the boardroom, and, you know, people can have that sense of community while being physically distanced, which has been wonderful. And I think, you know, people have talked about having, as you say, almost conferences virtually of like 350 people. And I've, you know, like yourself, I've been to Zoom meetings where you do breakout groups and things. It's quite incredible, actually.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the technology is there. And I suppose the other thing to recognize is that people have such different ways of working and circumstances may dictate what they need to be doing, whether they're less than full-time trainees for a whole host of reasons, or they have childcare commitments, or indeed shielding trainees, which I think is particularly prevalent at the moment, is that these trainees don't need to feel isolated in that sense, is that there are still opportunities they can truly feel a part of if that's right for them at that time. And I think inclusivity, especially now, is bigger than ever, isn't it, with Black Lives Matter going on and everything. I think it's just so key to recognize that we are all here, we all have a part to play, and how we can work together to have a voice for the trainees.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's obviously the training voice, but I would also be keen to, you know, have a bit of the public voice and the community voice in there, because you've probably heard about the citizens' jury that we've had in the past sort of couple of years up in Scotland, you know, asking the average person in Scotland, you know, what do you want? What do you think this part of the healthcare system does? And actually, it's an educational thing. A lot of people don't actually know what different parts of the healthcare system do, and we just take that for granted. We always assume so much, and actually that was really powerful reading the report from that, just to understand how little knowledge there is. And I'd be really keen as part of the community going forward to involve, you know, patients, maybe have some kind of virtual consultations about sort of social aspects and what's important to patients, because as we said earlier, we are the future of general practice, and you know, we need to engage our communities wider, speaking than obviously the AIT and first line communities. So
no, I completely agree with you. I think, and it's a fascinating interplay, isn't it? Because we know that once, for instance, if we look at a random topic, that we took the topic of well-being, for instance, we know that if doctors look after their own well-being, they're much, much more likely, and evidence has proved this, to look after the interests of their patients' well-being from more than just a physical aspect, you know, looking at patients from a very holistic thing. If you, it's almost that practice what you preach, almost dictate in a sense. And well-being has truly come to the core for RCGP and the main council. But I know that's been a big thing up in Scotland, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the priorities, so there was a report published last year by the Scottish section of the RCGP from the front line. And one of our priorities is well-being and practitioner well-being, especially in trying to get a practitioner service, as in GP and GP trainee service, set up in Scotland. And also, you know, other priorities are interface working and obviously growing the GP working sort of community to sort of recruit from, so growing the numbers of GPs in Scotland as a priority is right across the board, really.
Yeah, and I think that's well recognised even across the nation, isn't it? We need the numbers, and we need our community to continue to grow and to develop. I suppose from someone that hasn't trained in Scotland, at least since graduating from medical school, my question would be, so in Scotland, how does it work in terms of faculties and how big a group of trainees do you represent yourself, Katerina? How does it work?
So our faculties are sort of split into sort of east, west. So east is sort of Dundee, west is globally sort of Glasgow, and north, I'm sort of southeast, which is kind of Edinburgh locally. So in terms of numbers of trainees, about sort of 250 thereabouts. And then we've got Highlands and Islands and sort of north representation. So actually we've got our Scottish Council, and we've got the First Five and AIT committee, which goes right across Scotland, obviously. But then we've got our individual reps for those regions, because it's more of a personal feel. And that sort of, you know, you want the trainee or the First Five perhaps in the region so they can bring back region specific, you know, experiences and questions. So you know, it's almost like they're immersed in that area, so they can bring things to the wider meeting. So the communication at the moment is pretty good, but I guess the engagement from trainees generally and First Fives, actually, because you know everybody's busy, could be better.
And I think that's something we're all striving for, and I think the hope in 2020 and onwards is to get that voice out there, isn't it? It's to get the recognition of the hard work that is already being done by a lot of key people, but also acknowledging the fact that, you know, more hands on deck, the better, to try and get processes streamlined, as you say, looking at your practitioner wellbeing program or other things. There are probably lots of trainees with other experiences, or maybe they've experienced similar things in other parts of the country before that may not have been brought to the table previously. And as you say, it's interesting because Scotland, in and of itself, there's just vast experiences. I expect if you're a trainee sort of in the Hebrides versus being in Edinburgh and, you know, doing more rural Scotland as well, I can't imagine the vast difference that your GP training will have in itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And, do you know, that's why it's so important to to, you know, have people from those areas feeding in, because actually we don't, you know, in Edinburgh, we don't really appreciate the challenges often of the Highland and Island communities. And obviously that's where sort of NHS Near Me has been originally used a lot by sort of pharmacy teams up there. And now obviously we're using it in the pandemic, but we've got things like rural fellowships, so post-CCT fellowships, where you get that experience, you know, go out to Arran, for example, and work for a year and find out what it's like being a rural GP or head up to the Highlands, which are great. And I'm sure, you know, you guys down south have got similar, but just to, you know, we've got the deep end practices. So health inequality is a massive thing as well. Our current chair, Carrie Lunan, is really passionate. She works in what's called a deep end practice. So significant health inequalities, and there are pockets everywhere, aren't there? But especially in Edinburgh. And so that kind of inequalities fellowship is available post-CCT, you know, and other medical education fellowships. But again, you know, open to everybody, but sometimes, like everything, they're not well enough advertised. So again, an aim is to get those better advertised and increase awareness. Now, obviously, because of COVID, none of those are happening this year. But, you know, wanting to spread the word. And again, as part of the collaboration with the rest of the UK, maybe opening up, you know, knowledge about fellowships elsewhere to trainees that are based in Scotland, but may want to go to, you know, England or Wales or Northern Ireland to do a year for, you know, a different experience.
Absolutely. And I think that's a really key thing. Obviously, there are maybe some factors that limit certain trainees to staying in a particular area because of family. But for other trainees, that the experiences are vast. And you're right, with out of training placement experiences or a year break or a fellowship. I know in London, there's lots of sort of, they call them spin fellowships in certain parts of London that you can get involved in. And there are certain first five trainees I know that have found them to be really invaluable experiences. Or indeed, if your interest is currently with what's going on with COVID and digital technology and digital health, or even working with Public Health England, there are these opportunities out there, and it's about the exposure and trying to find out what's going on. But I agree with what you're saying in terms of there being a collaboration across the board of what opportunities are available in your area, and maybe trainees would be really interested to find out about it. So I think that's definitely something to sort of think about. And I guess, so if a Scottish trainee was to be hearing our conversation right now, Katarina, and they did want to get involved, would you say the best way to go about it would be maybe through the finding details through the RCGP website for Scotland, or are there any other means of social media or anything that you guys use?
So we do have Twitter accounts. So there's RCGP Scotland Twitter, and then there's RCGP Southeast Scotland Twitter, and different variations of that. To be honest, our Twitter accounts are probably not as active as they could be. They're not run by clinicians. They're usually run by, mostly run by non-clinicians, and so people that work in the office. So I guess there's something to develop there. We were thinking as AIT reps, maybe taking over some of the Twitter accounts just to sort of promote upcoming conferences, meetings, that sort of thing. In terms of people getting in touch that are interested, probably through the website at the moment. For each area or region in Scotland, there's an email address to contact, and that will put you straight through to one of the AIT or first five reps, who'll be able to direct you to the right person and answer your questions.
Yeah, and I think, and when you were talking about social media engagement, I think that is something that trainees possibly for the last 5 years or so have been really interested in using, because we know that that's what our peers may be using and that's their first port of call. So for an example, down in sort of the South London Faculty Board, which I'm on, a group of trainees have sort of spoken about the power of Instagram, for instance, because they appreciate that lots of trainees may be on that and how that will work. At the moment, it's slightly on hold because of COVID, but it is interesting to know, actually maybe moving away from our traditional forms of bulletins and emails may be required to increase that engagement and acknowledge that we might have to do our reaching out to people in different ways as well.
Yeah, because we have had a Facebook page for quite a while. We set that up. We set up Moodle accounts and things like that. But as you say, it's knowing how best to engage. And I do think Twitter is a great forum. I'm on it, but I'm not active on it yet. But I think maybe we need to be more active in that forum because people are using it more and more, really, to get quick updates, increase their educational knowledge at the touch of a button, really.
Exactly. And I don't think we could have this conversation without at least touching upon your experience of the RCA, because obviously you are in a you know, good number of people that had to sit it with about 4 weeks turnaround times. Is that about right? So it'd be really interesting just to hear your thoughts as a trainee being put in that position. How was it for you?
Well, I think it's a testament to us as GP trainees and doctors to say how adaptable we are, because I think, you know, COVID certainly told us to expect the unexpected, and, you know, ever-present change is the tagline for life at the moment. So we essentially had 3 weeks to do the exam, complete the exam. There were 87 of us in Scotland that had to do it. And so in terms of preparation, we had the handbook and we had the exam guidance from the college, and really it was down to us to sort of manipulate things in our practice. So I think the hardest thing was, you think, goodness, you have to get 13 consultations. They've got to be 10 minutes and you have to get 3 weeks to get them. Perfect. I'll get them on the first day. Life's not like that, sadly. So I think, you know, we're actually, myself and another trainee, are making a video for the new GPST3s coming in August to just sort of say, listen, guys, it's okay. We survived it. And here are our top tips. So I guess top tips were, as with anything, preparation. So what we did was we sort of looked at, you know, who was phoning in and thought about patients that might lend their situations or their problems to 10 minutes consultation. So obviously with COVID, people often don't ring up with one problem, and often it's, you know, it's two or three or four or so. And there was a little bit of, you know, picking patients, and there was a little bit of priming in that before we sort of consent and went on the video call or the face-to-face or the phone call. We phoned them up quickly and said, this is what's happening, just so you know, ahead of time. So a bit of a phone call prep. And then the platform was pretty straightforward to use, which is good. So managed to do it. I'm not saying all the consults were exactly 10 minutes at all, but, you know, as long as they were sort of 10 minutes and a little bit of chat that you didn't miss the thing. So I guess the format is going to be similarly marked to the CSA. So CSA prep is very useful in terms of structure and timeliness. It's just, you know, one of my colleagues actually had booked 2 of the 3 weeks off as annual leave, so had to cancel it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess it's, you know, things like that. You couldn't prepare for, but I mean, I think the key words were sort of being patient, just not expecting too much, you know, and sort of to get it done in a day. And it was doable. It was just, I think it was just because it was all sort of thrust on you and there was very little lead in time.
I mean, that's exactly what I was going to say. I think it's a really commendable job that the ST3s, who were thrust into this pressure situation, especially if you had jobs lined up or anything else going on in August or annual leave planned, sort of to try and scramble that around and adapt to a situation. Really reassuring with those top tips, and I'm sure they will actually really help some of the people that are listening, Katarina. So I really look forward to when you do produce that video, and it'd be helpful for us to have a copy of that, because we can definitely put it on our channels as well, because it applies to all the trainees, I guess, who will be sitting the RCA. We know that this is likely to be the exam for the foreseeable future until things change from a pandemic purpose. So it's not, you know, it's probably here to stay if we are all being sort of quite frank about it. And I think it's very useful for the new trainees, you know, people who have just about finished ST1 and people coming into GP training to see that, you know, the college has to adapt to the situation, had to adapt quite quickly as well, to respond to what the ST3s were going to do, because there was a significant portion that didn't have exams. 87 in Scotland, you said, which is, you know, is no small number at all in terms of actual jobs at the end of the day of people working as independent practitioners, which populations need. So it's really nice to hear. Overall, I'm sure was quite stressful at times, but overall a positive outlook, and you've not even had your result yet and you've got a big smile on your face.
So. Yeah. Okay, yeah, we will see. But, you know, and I think actually, is, you know, you're absolutely right. The college did a great job in turning things around in a very short space of time, because they did want to ensure that we all qualified on time is the hope, and things weren't delayed and delayed and delayed. So yeah, fair play, because there was a heck of a lot of hard work that went into that, and I do appreciate that. And you know, I mean, you obviously have to keep a wide perspective, and you know, as the trainee rep, I had a lot of trainees get in touch with me to sort of see, had I the inside track, you know, when were we starting, what was the platform going to be like, how would it work? And of course you realize in these situations, you know, nobody really knew until the last minute, until it was released, and then everybody breathed a sigh of relief because the platform was great and that's what we were expecting, so we were very thankful for that. But you know, I think it's like anything, isn't it? It's communication is so important, and you know, and that engagement with your colleagues and also with the patients and things, yeah, really pays off and sort of in these situations.
Absolutely. I also think it's a very unique position for you to have been in, and I know some of the other members on council for the committee for AITs also felt this similar way, that you're representing and putting forward the sort of questions and queries that I'm sure you were getting bombarded with regularly from your other colleagues, as well as your own fears and anxieties and what may be going on, and representing those in a very sort of, I have to say, having been in lots of those meetings, very calm and, you know, pragmatic ways of, these are our issues, how can we get around them? But also being the solution in terms of letting the trainees know and disseminating the information as soon as you did receive anything. And I think that's key, because it's a two-way street. And I think that's one of the things about being a representative, is obviously you're there to sort of champion the needs of your cohort, but you're also one of those trainees as well, and looking out and recognizing that actually a lot of this stuff will impact your own training as well as that. So it's a really interesting interplay, I thought.
Yeah, it is. And I have to say, at the risk of sounding really cheesy, there was something that we learned about last year in the Leadership Fellowship, which is sort of trying, you know, empathy mapping a situation. So trying to, you know, when you're in something, it's very difficult not to get very emotionally engaged with it. Understandably, we all do. But then just trying to step out of that space and go, okay, this is going on for me. You understand what's going on for you. But then looking at other people's perspectives and the perspective of the college, and trying to understand lots of different perspectives. So actually, I sort of had to rein myself in when I was getting a bit, oh no, you know, I've got 3 weeks, you know, that kind of natural stress, to sort of say, actually, loads of us are in this situation. The college are doing what they can. They want us to get through it. You know, it'll be okay. But yeah.
I think that's where I see Katerina, a cool anesthetics head coming through. I think very much needed. I think, and you're right, sometimes when we are maybe face-to-face with your patient and doing sorts of, you know, one-on-one calls and all of this, it's all very minutiae, isn't it? And that becomes really important. But taking that step back and looking at the bigger picture of how it's affecting our general landscape and how undoubtedly it will for years to come, it's a change of shifting perspectives as well, I guess, as time will go on. And I guess you, looking back now, in a couple of years' time, you'll look through this year, and I think a lot of people will be boggled with all the things that we've managed to juggle and change, especially for those who will have finished and qualified this year. And what's in the future for you, Katerina, sort of looking forward?
So success in the RCA, fingers crossed.
Yes, everything crossed.
And then, so I'm going to be doing probably a salary job from Successions from August, and a bit of out of hours. And as I suggested, the fellowships are all sort of up in the air until next year. I was going to do one of those, but maybe I'll apply next spring to one. And maybe, again, because of COVID, jobs have sort of come and gone off the radar, and maybe apply for a teaching job at the university if that comes up, just for a couple of sessions a week. But again, we don't know about availability. So again, the theme is, you know, adapting to uncertainty. But listen, that's what we do in our daily lives in general practice, don't we? We just deal with uncertainty. And so, you know, COVID's definitely magnified that for us all. But yeah, it's certainly let us grow more ways of adapting, I think.
Exactly. And I think it's really made me reflect personally on how much of a privileged position we are in as trainees, because you know that you have your future job or placement or posting or wherever it may be, and whether or not it may need to be special adaptations put into place or something. You have an educational supervisor, you have your sort of support network around you as a trainee, and we have lots of safeguards, which in theory should work when you, you know, press an alarm button and go, help, I need something. We would hope that that comes into play. It certainly has for me as a trainee, and I know there's varied experiences across the country, but I know the council and RCGP in general really want trainees to feel supported through that journey. So coming out on the other end, that's a whole new challenge as well to see this landscape. And but I have no doubt you'll be absolutely fine from that perspective. And I guess, Katerina, if there were any other sort of messages you would want to say to trainees who are listening, or anything else that you would like to share? Was there anything in particular you wanted to let people know on the podcast?
I mean, I think, you know, those sort of, primarily get involved. It'd be great to have you. There are lots of college events up and down the country. Looking on the college website gives you a flavour of that, and obviously more virtual coming up at the moment. And I guess just sincerely, it is, as you say, such a privilege to be a GP trainee, and, you know, sort of coming to be a GP. And just trying to make the most of that as trainees and sort of going forward is a really important thing, and trying to engage with our local communities as well. And we had a keynote, so Richard Scott lecture last month from Professor Sir Michael Marmot about social inequality and COVID-19. And I don't know whether you watched it, Mira. And I thought, you know, fantastic. Really.
Highly recommend.
What's that?
I said it's fantastic. Highly recommend.
Yeah. And just, you know, hearing him talk about some of the things that go on, and, you know, knowing about a lot of inequality, we've just got such an opportunity to make a difference as GPs and GP trainees as well. And so I would encourage people to embrace that, really.
I mean, great. And I have to say, so Katerina and I agreed to film this, and we've had to reschedule a number of times for work clashes and everything else. So finally, in an evening on a Wednesday, we both agreed to do this. And I'm really glad that we did, because it's actually been a really lovely chat to have with you. And thank you so much for coming to join us. And all the best for the RCA, but I'm sure you don't really need it from me, Katerina.
Thanks very much, Mira. It's been a pleasure.
Cool. So, so that was great, Mira. I really enjoyed listening to that. And, you know, Katerina has had a really interesting career path. I can't imagine having been in training for so long and finishing one training program and then having to start GP training again. It's a lot, but it sounds like a really interesting journey she's been on, loads of great experiences that she shared. So, yeah, I thought I really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it highlights another example of why primary care is kind of a definitely not one fits all, but lots of people find their home finally in primary care after having done loads of different things, as some of us have all done. It was a really interesting conversation, and having, you know, gone to university in Scotland myself, it's a place that I hold dear to my heart. A lot of my really good friends to this day are all working in Scotland. So hearing about how training is up there, and obviously how recent events have changed exams for not, you know, I think we've talked about this before. We obviously see everything through our London periscope, but seeing the wider sort of reaching influences that the general climate has had on training as well has been quite an interesting thing. And also, if you are listening and you are in Scotland, to get involved with your AIT groups and being a rep, because I think all of that is very, very important, especially with your faculties, so that you have a voice. And producer Bryn will helpfully be putting a link, as Katerina suggested, for the RCGP Scottish websites as well.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked also how obviously we're trying to diversify the range of regional accents that we have in the podcast. We had a Scottish rep with a Northern Irish accent. And also just, you know, I think, again, just hearing her story about, you know, meeting her husband, moving around, is something that I'm sure a lot of people can relate to throughout any kind of medical training. So, it was just nice to hear a bit of a kind of personal story as well.
I also really liked how she talked about the role that as Scottish reps did successfully brought in things, actually successfully made changes to sort of their training program and sort of what happens up north. And also, I quite like that they have their own Scottish Council at the Royal College as well. I wasn't aware of that before, so that was an interesting fact, and how they feed into the UK Council too. So it just, it seemed like a very sort of a well-organized, well-oiled system up there. So it was really nice to just get that insight.
Yeah, I think the devolved kind of, so each of the four nations has a chair, so that the three devolved chairs do a really good job of connecting locally with their members. And whenever I speak to people who are involved in faculties or reps in any of the devolved nations, it always does seem like they've got a really good kind of close-knit community of people there, which is really nice.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like, although there have been lots of not very nice things that have come out as a result of the pandemic, I think one of the nice things being reps is that we've actually met far more frequently, albeit via Zoom, on our regular catch-ups. Obviously, the training world was sort of thrown into a bit of a tumultuous storm with everything going on, but it was really nice to catch up with what was going on around the country in all four nations, what people's thoughts were on, you know, what RCGP were doing, but also to get some feedback and also to put together responses like the survey and various other things which we've talked about before that was truly representative of all the GP trainees, you know, not just a few voices or voices you may hear on the podcast, etc.
Yeah, I think that sense of community is really important. And I think, you know, we're all based in London, but sometimes even in London, there's a lot of trainees who don't necessarily connect with what's going on around them. So sometimes it's good to just hear that, you know, there's lots of other kind of vibrant, really thriving places that you can be a GP trainee. It's not all about being in the South or in London. Actually, you can get really great experience anywhere. And that's not just about the clinical experience you have, but kind of like the bigger picture, the bigger GP community, and you can get involved in that anywhere in a really meaningful way.
Absolutely. And also the different opportunities that are available. So being up in Scotland, working in more rural practices and having a bit more of sort of expedition type medicine that you can blend into your everyday working, depending on where you're going to be working. And that's something we sort of touch up on, that Johannes and I touch up on when we speak to our Welsh reps, which will hopefully be the next episode that you guys will hear.
Yeah, so that will indeed be the next episode that you guys hear, and we look forward to you joining us then. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Thank you again for tuning in, and we'll catch you again for the next episode of Somewhere in Between. Thanks everyone, and speak to you soon. Bye guys.
Bye.
Can I cheekily suggest we meet up and have a celebratory drink? I mean, what, there's only like four of us.
Well, and then we can finally get the photo for the podcast four of us. Yeah, where's easy to meet?
Yeah.
Hatton's going to suggest Nando's again at Euston.
Hey.